confused. So what Mr. Rincewind thought was broccoli and ham turned out to be forest green.
Let me speak to Captain Carrot, will you?
I'm afraid that is not entirely convenient at the moment, said Leonard, his face clouded with concern.
Why? Did he have the broccoli and ham too?
No, he had the cadmium yellow. There was a yelp and a series of clangs somewhere behind Leonard. On the brighter side, however, I can report that the Mark II privy appears to function perfectly.
Excerpt from the Notebooks of Leonard of Quirm. On creatures real and imaginary inhabiting the void.
On Draco Stellaris Nauticae, the star voyaging dragon. This vast dragon trawls debris from the void with its gaping maw. Using normal dragon digestion, it compresses this debris and turns into gases. These flame through the ventral orifice, propelling the dragon with considerable force. The wings are tiny and vestigial. So vast is the beast that smaller dragons voyage by attaching themselves to its hide. Oh, what a cosmos that has such creatures within it. On Aphodius Maximus, the giant dung beetle, witnessed during the flight of the great bird, very similar to the solar dung beetle of Gelibabian mythology, it forms its dung into small planets. It appears to have various igniferous orifices for propulsion in the void, in a manner similar to the Hershebian bombardier beetle. As below, so above. Mirabile dictu. On Bora imaginaris horridis, or imaginary hull borer, this, as yet undiscovered but greatly feared, creature may have evolved from squid washed over the rim of the disk. It employs a spike with rotating teeth for first piercing and then enlarging a hole in the spaceship's hull, into which fluids may be injected to dissolve the contents. It is possible that a gas bag at its tail end is used for propulsion and that it possesses tentacles for gripping. It is also possible that the creature is imaginary. Note, if such a creature invades the ship, it is vital that the crew split up in order to search for it. Nucleus situm ex orbita unus certis maximus.
The kite, in its headlong plunge, curved back towards the rimfall. Now the water was a great tumbling cloud of mist. Captain Carrot hovered in front of a window, taking pictures with the iconograph.
"This is amazing," he said. "I'm sure we'll find the answers to some questions that have puzzled mankind for millennia."
"Good. Can you get this frying pan off my back?" said Rincewind.
Said Leonard.
It was a sufficiently troubling syllable for the others to look at him.
"We seem to be, losing air rather faster than I thought," said the genius. "But I'm sure the hull isn't any leakier than I allowed for. And we seem to be falling faster, according to Mr. Stibbons. It's a little difficult to piece it all together, of course, because of the uncertain effects of the disk's magical field. We should be all right if we wear our helmets all the time."
"There's plenty of air near it to the world, isn't there?" said Rincewind. "Can't we just fly into it and open a window?"
Leonard stared mournfully into the mists that filled half of their view.
"We are moving very fast," he said slowly. "And air at this speed... air is... the thing about air... Tell me, what do you understand by the words shooting star?"
"What's that supposed to mean?" Rincewind demanded.
That we die an immensely horrible death."
"Oh, that," said Rincewind.
Leonard tapped a dial on one of the tanks of air.
"I really don't think my calculations were that ro..."
Light exploded into the cabin. The kite rose through tendrils of mist. The crew stared.
"No one will ever believe us," said Carrot eventually.
He raised his iconograph towards the view, and even the imp inside, which belongs to a species that was seldom impressed with anything, said, "Gosh," in a tiny voice as it painted furiously.
"I don't believe this," said Rincewind, "and I'm seeing it."
A tower. An immensity of rock rose from the mist, and looming over the mist, huge as worlds, the backs of four elephants. It was like flying through.